For 91.3 FM, WVUD and WVUD HD1 Newark in the great state of Delaware, I'm Bill Humphrey, and thanks for listening. The following episode was recorded and produced for WVUD and our podcast listeners by me at my studio in Newton, Massachusetts. The opinions represented in this program by hosts or guests do not necessarily reflect those of WVUD, the University of Delaware, or my own political campaign committee. Episodes are available for download on Tuesdays at arsenalfordemocracy.com and from iTunes or Stitcher. We air the show in Delaware on 91.3 FM and stream it simultaneously from WVUD.org on Tuesdays at 12:30 p.m. Eastern. Follow us on Twitter at AFD Radio or like us on Facebook. This is the Arsenal for Democracy.
This land is your land. This land is my land. California. New York Island. Redwood Forest, Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me.
You're listening to Arsenal for Democracy, episode 326, recorded on Sunday, September 27th, 2020. I'm your host, Bill Humphrey. Joining me on the line, as usual, from the Mountain West in Idaho, is Rachel. Hello, Rachel. How are you doing?
Hi, Bill. I'm doing well.
Well, we are going to be talking about Mountain West topics today. Specifically, we're going to be talking about the Teapot Dome scandal of the 1920s, and then we're going to be talking about some of the other sort of similar scandals the country has experienced over the last several years under the Trump administration. One of the things that I was commenting to you about before we started recording was that there's been so many of these as I call them, teapot dome level scandals, almost every day, that it's very difficult to remember some of the ones that were pretty significant early on. And a lot of these don't have to do with Trump himself personally. They have to do with various appointees around him, such as you'll talk about, the former Interior Secretary, Ryan Zinke. So let's get into it first by talking about the teapot dome scandal itself, so we have some context for that, and then we'll talk about some of these weird corruption scandals from the Trump administration that some people might have already forgotten about. So in 1922, the Navy Department transferred some oil reserves to the Interior Department. Previously, of course, these had been, you know, under naval control because they wanted to have strategic reserves for the Navy to power its ships. And then there was a decision made in this was the Warren G. Harding administration. We talked last week about his vice president, Calvin Coolidge, who went on to become president when Harding died in office during all of this. But the decision was made that these oil reserves should be transferred from the Navy Department to the Interior Department. This is where the scandal begins. Interior Secretary Albert B. Fall gave a no-bid, undervalued lease contract for exploitation to a Sinclair Oil Corporation subsidiary. This was Teapot Dome in Wyoming. And also, he gave one to Pan American Petroleum and Transport Company at Elk Hills Oil Field in California. These no-bid, undervalued leases were made in exchange for secret bribes totaling a modern-day equivalent of more than $7 million in the form of gifts and loans from the lessees. Secretary Fall also repeatedly took action to cover up the bribes and kickbacks on paper, as well as to try to legitimate the leases otherwise, but he also almost immediately began paying off debts and back taxes while making other obvious uses of the money, and that kept on raising suspicions as the investigations went on. I think it is interesting that we refer to this as the Teapot Dome scandal, although most of the bribery was actually related to the Elk Hills oil field in California. And that's some of the stuff that, you know, he kind of got busted on, the bigger picture stuff. But almost immediately, he basically got caught or started to be caught. Rival oil men who had not received this, you know, sweetheart deal on these leases complained to the U.S. Senate alleging unfair special treatment in the oil leases, possibly involving illegal activity. And the U.S. Senate, as well as journalists in the Mountain West and California and other places like that, began investigations that would last into 1924. And that was beyond the death of President Warren G. Harding. Key figures in these investigations included Republican Senator Robert La Follette and Democratic Senator Thomas J. Walsh. La Follette from the Upper Midwest, Walsh from Montana. This is, you know, we just talked about a few weeks ago about La Follette, his role in other investigations into things that were inappropriately happening, but he also played a role in this particular controversy. Albert Fall, the Interior Secretary, was eventually convicted in 1929 of accepting bribes for the leases. No one was actually convicted of making the bribes, although one of the Sinclairs was convicted on related charges, I think like witness tampering. The U.S. Supreme Court canceled the leases in 1927 on the basis of corruption in obtaining them, and the Navy Department actually reassumed control of these oil reserves completely that had been transferred to the Interior Department. The U.S. Supreme Court also confirmed the right of the U.S. Senate to have subpoena powers and apply consequences for failure to appear investigations in McCrane v. Dougherty, or Dougherty, I'm not sure, and that was obviously consequential in that previously it had not been completely determined whether or not the Senate had that power of subpoena and witness compulsion and so forth. So there wasn't any production at Teapot Dome until oil production at Teapot Dome after the whole scandal and the transfer back to the Navy Department and various other, it was shifted around various departments until 1976. The oil field was sold from the federal government to the private sector in 2015 during the Obama administration. So that is a sort of summary of what prior to Watergate had been sort of the biggest scandal or corruption scandal in American politics. I mean, maybe you could talk about like Credit Mobilier being up in that same category. That was a scandal in I think it was the Reconstruction era, where they were just openly paying off various members of Congress for things. But this was sort of in the 20th century, at least, between this early 1920s scandal and Watergate. This was like the big scandal that people referred back to. Now, still, everyone refers to everything as being a Gate-type scandal in reference to Watergate, but one thing that I have maintained, as I think many of our listeners know, is that many of the scandals of the Trump administration, as Rachel is about to talk about, often more reflect the characteristic of the Teapot Dome scandal than something like Watergate. Yes, certain personal conduct actions of President Trump are more akin to the Watergate scandal and cover-up and all those things. But a lot of it, especially the people around him, it's more similar to the Teapot Dome scandal. So we wanted to talk about those things together. All right, Rachel, why don't you tell us about some of the Trump scandals that gone but not forgotten, except by most people, because there's too much stuff happening.
Right. So first off, I wanted to say that if you kind of look for comparisons to the Teapot Dome scandal in the Trump administration, a lot of people are talking about Trump's refusal to release his tax returns. I think that's just tied into that subpoena power and that witness compulsion to testify that McGrane v. Dougherty codified into law. But I think that there's just so much more than Trump's missing tax returns. It's really such a minor part of the scandals that are happening. Like you said, every day, there's a lot of pay to play, a lot of money changing hands in Trump's picks. And one thing that kind of got buried, it's only been 2 years since the story broke and the Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke left office. But I think it's kind of left the collective memory just because people don't really think about the Interior Secretary as much. It's not really as big in the news. I think an exception to that is in the Mountain West or in like pretty mineral-rich, oil-rich parts of the nation, such as the Mountain West. But Ryan Zinke lasted for 2 years, from 2017 to 2018. He left in December of 2018 due to a lot of investigations into his conduct. There was a lot of questioning over some of the decisions he made and the ethics involved. But one of the big things is whether Ryan Zinke personally benefited from a Montana development deal that was linked to Halliburton. This came from an LA Times article published in 2018. So that case was referred to the Department of Justice. It said it could result in criminal charges. I don't think it did. As far as I can recall, I think Zinke just kind of sunk out of the collective consciousness, and I don't think any criminal charges actually happened. So in this case, there were allegations that Zinke improperly spent taxpayer dollars to meet with Halliburton's chairman, David Lessar, to discuss a land deal in Zinke's hometown of Whitefish, Montana. The deal involved a charitable foundation that Zinke had established and was run by his wife, Lolita. And when the Inspector General, Mary Kendall, was trying to investigate his alleged misconduct, Zinke tried to get her replaced with a Trump appointee in October of 2018. However, this maneuver was spotted by people, and Zinke then backed off, and he called it a miscommunication among staff. So another report from Kendall detailed other ethical violations by Zinke. He took his wife on business trips and vacations a lot, and he tried to classify her as a volunteer to circumvent reimbursement requirements for personal guests. One big trip was a trip to Greece, and he brought along Secret Service protection with him on this 2017 summer vacation with his wife and friends in Greece. And this cost the taxpayers more than $25,000. Also, another big thing, I don't know if your listeners recall, but a big thing in 2018 was, I believe it's called the Bears Ears National Park in Utah. Trump was trying to open up that area to mineral and oil exploration. And he did this by cutting the boundaries of the Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument in Utah. And there were allegations that this improperly benefited a Republican state lawmaker whose land was removed from the monument. So then he personally could get rich off of this oil and gas exploration. So I think in 1920s terms, this is definitely a scandal of Teapot Dome size. But I think we've just been so basically snowed over by scandals happening constantly that it's hard to, I guess, grasp onto these long enough for it to make an impact. So I think today Zinke's been largely forgotten about. The current Secretary of the Interior acts pretty much the same way, but he doesn't. I think he's a lot more secretive about it, and it just hasn't really captured the news that the Zinke's actions did, just because it was so blatant. And Zinke did kind of set himself up as this show off. I think when he was confirmed, he rode a horse down the street in Washington, D.C. He went to the Boy Scout Jamboree. So he was very flamboyant and very attention-seeking. So I think that just swung the spotlight onto him and his actions in a way that the current Secretary of the Interior just doesn't seem to get that scrutiny. However, the current Secretary of the Interior has kind of held up the temporary Bureau of Land Management, the other BLM. There's a temporary director who has been in office for over a year, and he hasn't been put through the same Senate confirmation process that all administration officials need to be put through. It's just been deferred time and time again. So the BLM manages 27 million acres in Montana, which is nearly one third of the state. This is coming from a Washington Post article that came out just yesterday. So Steve Bullock has brought a lawsuit against the BLM. He is seeking to protect two parcels of land in the southwest part of the state, the Lewistown and Missoula areas. And this temporary director, Pendley, William Pendley, has signed resource management plans for both of them. The one for Lewistown would have opened up 95% of the 650,000 acre area to leases for oil and natural gas drilling. And a Judge Morris said that Pendley actually exercised powers reserved to a BLM director that has been properly confirmed and properly set up in office, which this temporary BLM director has not. And this Pendley character has been involved in land deals since the 80s. So in 1982, he was the head of the Minerals Management Service. And he and another interior official, along with their wives, attended a dinner with two coal company attorneys on the same day that Pendley and his colleague had made a favorable decision regarding bids on Powder River Basin coal leases. This was outlined in a general accounting office report. The coal company officials picked up the dinner tab, which is the equivalent of $1,300 in today's dollars, so not an insignificant amount. After the GAO's findings became public, he had to resign. He had moved from the Department of the Interior to the Department of the Navy, and he was forced to resign. Later, he became the president of the Mountain States Legal Foundation, which was founded in 1977 and was initially run by Reagan's first Interior Secretary, James G. Watt. This foundation received backing from ultra-conservative groups such as the Koch-linked Donors Trust and Joseph Coors of beer fame.
And the Denver baseball stadium.
Oh, right. Yes. And then Penley was later counsel of record representing businessman Sidney Longwell and his company Solenex. Solenex leased 6,200 acres in northwestern Montana in 1982 during the Reagan administration for about $1 an acre. Longwell wanted permission to build a 6-mile service road and bridge over the Two Medicine River on lands considered sacred by the Blackfeet tribe, and this dispute went on for decades. So Penley's kind of had his fingers in the oil and mineral extraction business pies for a long time, and it was very clear what his positions on public lands were. He wrote in a National Review magazine article in 2016 that, quote, the founding fathers intended all lands owned by the federal government to be sold. So it was very clear which side his bread was buttered on. Now this ruling by Judge Morris has put a lot of his decisions that he's made over the past 424 days into consideration. So some other decisions that he's made regarding land management are really going to be scrutinized and see if some of those maybe will need to be reversed because of the big conflicts of interest and the fact that he just hasn't gone through the proper Senate procedures to be put into the directorship. So again, this is a pretty big scandal and something that the Senate probably should have been harping on for the past 424 days. And I think this kind of really shows that even though the Senate has these procedures in place and these powers that were given to them by the Supreme Court in the 1927 decision, they're not really choosing to exercise those powers. And I think something that's been talked about a lot in the news lately is the balance of power between the three branches of government. And if one branch just is choosing not to exercise their powers, it really throws everything out of balance, as we've been experiencing for the past 4 years.
Well, and I think there's been a lot of discussion on the balance of powers between the branches in light of the current Supreme Court situation as well, as we're recording this. One of the things that I found interesting, you referred to it as this sort of effect of having, you know, been snowed over these particular scandals by every other scandal landing on top of it. And I think that's absolutely true. But it is interesting to me that these scandals have been not focused on at all by the media, by sort of the liberal elite class, the Democratic Party leadership, anybody. Like, nobody seems to really be focusing on this, even though these are much more straightforward scandals in the way that Teapot Dome was, that the ordinary public can understand very quickly at a glance compared to some of the other things. Similarly, you know, some of Trump's personal corruption around, you know, getting the government to pay his companies for various services and facilities while he's in office, things like that, has been somewhat talked about, but not very much. All the focus on various things around, like, you know, Russia and who told people which and what when and all that kind of stuff has really obscured these particular, like, open and shut corruption scandals. And it's also interesting, I think, in particular because, you know, Trump ran on being the deals guy, right? Who's going to get such good deals? And, like, very clearly, some people are getting very good deals out of this. Like you mentioned about the sort of almost like rezoning, except, you know, taking certain parts out of national parks and monuments that were land owned by Republicans, things like that, or basically like things that would have been federally protected from oil and gas exploration. And some people still own that land, even if it's covered by various federal protections, and then all of a sudden they can use it because another Republican gave them was looking out for them and getting them this deal and that kind of thing. Like, you know, it's given Trump's self-narrative about how he's the deals guy who's going to do so many deals, it is weird that this did not become a bigger focus. I mean, I guess you can then start raising questions about, does that imply that everyone involved in making the decisions over what is getting news coverage, like Democratic Party leaders, like executives at the various, you know, media companies and their parent companies, maybe are they also doing similar stuff and that's why it's not getting covered? I don't know. But it's perplexing to me that these were not the type of salient scandals that got seized upon and highlighted and so forth. And I think some of it may not be some sort of nefarious strategic thing. Some of it may just be that some of these people are not the brightest at making strategic picks and figuring out what's politically salient or not. Because I can't imagine that a lot of people, I mean, certainly some Trump supporters would have been fine with it or whatever, but I think there's probably quite a lot of people who would have been like, hey, it doesn't seem like they're fighting for us because they're just like very clearly shoveling as much money into their pockets as possible on the way out.
I think it's really savvy of Steve Bullock to have brought this up because he is running for the governorship, I believe, this year. So I think the fact that he did make it a campaign issue just really shows that at least somebody's trying to make hay of this in a way that's politically savvy.
He's running for the U.S. Senate. He's the incumbent governor of Montana.
Right. Yeah. So I think the fact that he's campaigning on this is probably pretty smart. And I think it would behoove some people perhaps running for office in Utah or Wyoming or Montana to start running on these issues. Like you said, I think it is something that's easily understandable by the public. It's pretty open and shut. Like, you can point to the fact that these people are getting these deals and are getting these public basically giving public lands away to private businesses. And I think that is something that it's one of the things that we have that's closest to a bipartisan issue, I think. I think that's kind of changed over the past 4 years or so, but I think conservation and public land usage is something that both
at the very least there's some cross-party appeal, right, on, and resonance on that issue.
Right.
There's some and, room for leverage there.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's something that can really kind of point to like class consciousness as well. Like these big business guys are trying to build roads, trying to restrict access to these public lands. I know that's a big thing in Idaho right now, is these private entities are basically trying to cut off access to public lands, which is illegal in the state of Idaho. So I think that's something that's really easy to point to and campaign off of. Like, these lands are for everyone. They're supposed to be accessed by everyone. And these people in particular are trying to cut off that access. So I think that's something that maybe a savvier politician or somebody who is looking to drum up this class consciousness and class solidarity would probably do well to start pursuing those tactics.
Yeah, I mean, I really thought that for a while, I thought especially with what happened with the Obama election in 2008 and some of the Senate races that year and 2006 and 2010 and so forth, I thought that there was a moment there where, you know, the Mountain West was going to become this core sort of focus for the Democratic Party and so forth. And then, you know, the blue firewall sort of broke in back east. And so it seemed like that sort of became more of a focus again, although I guess they are making a play for Arizona this year and so forth. The other thing that I was thinking about is, you know, if we go back to that Teapot Dome scandal in 1922, again, who was it that narked on this basically, right? It was a different like oil executive guy or whatever, who probably would have been more than happy to get a similar deal if it had been on the table and he'd been able to pay a similar bribe, right? But I don't know that for sure because I don't know who it was specifically or what his motivations were, but he was mad that he didn't get a fair deal. And I think that is something that also has a lot of resonance, right? Even if you don't necessarily have a problem with, you know, some of this stuff overall, I bet there's a lot of people who are like, well, I'm not getting this benefit, right? Like, how come I'm not getting a special deal? You know, and there's sort of a general sense that there should be some sort of scrap of equity there. I mean, obviously, everyone kind of knows that, like, the big corporations tend to be the ones that benefit the most from these things and have the most access and power. But again, if we're talking about this small potato stuff, like, oh, this particular Republican politician's land is now open to oil and gas drilling or whatever, like, there are a lot of other people who aren't getting that benefit, presumably, or similar cases where they could be getting benefit. So it is interesting that we haven't seen too much of that.
Right. Yeah. That is an interesting aspect as well. Not just the common man, but also the people that aren't privy to these deals happening behind closed doors.
All right. Well, Rachel, thank you so much for coming on to talk about the Teapot Dome scandal and some of the similar Teapot Dome style scandals of the Trump administration over the past several years.
Glad to be here.